Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, August 9th. I'm Wilder Bliss, Brosmer Brown, reporting for KMUD, youth and journalism intern. In tonight's news, Soham sees four fires this week. Humboldt Asian Pacific Islanders to celebrate Ubon, a festival of remembrance, Sunday. And the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Fire and road closures have kept emergency officials busy this Friday. Lauren Schmidt reports.
For the fourth consecutive day, a fire has broken out in southern Humboldt. This time in the Palo Verde community on Island Mountain Road. And while crews were responding, another emergency situation arose.
Chris Curtis, the duty chief for Humboldt Del Norte Unit. This morning at 10:39, there was a report of a fire off of Hog Trap Road. We sent a wildland response, which included five engines and one dozer. Sent two crews. Local government arrived at the scene at 11 o'clock, and they called for air tanker. They reported that it was 2 acres with a potential for 50 acres, and there were structures to consider. As we were responding, one of our engines reported that there is a slip out on Alder Point Road that's impassable. So we had to divert our resources around through Dyerville Loop Road.
Due to the quick response by Palo Verde Fire, the neighboring Alder Point Fire, and the CAL FIRE air tankers, crews were able to stop the fire's forward progress just before noon. The fire grew to a total of 2 acres in size. As for the cause, it's suspected that a downed power line may have started the blaze.
We have prevention staff doing the investigation at the scene. There was a report that power lines were down. There was a life safety checkback regarding the power lines.
Two engines and a crew remain on scene. The duty chief noted that a slip out in the construction zone near Lower Sawmill delayed mutual aid response, temporarily closing Alder Point Road. For more on this, we spoke with
Tony Sagatti, Humboldt County Department of Public Works, the Deputy Director of the Engineering Division. We had a slip out on our detour road that closed the road. We're currently working on reestablishing that detour and hope to have the road open by dark. The slope that we had the detour on top of, or the slope below the detour, became unstable. And we're stabilizing that slope. Alder Point Road the geology is unique and it is moving, and it's very hard to keep a flat, stable road surface, especially after all the rain we get in the winters.
Is there a possibility of it not reopening?
No, it will reopen tonight.
Officials estimate that Alder Point Road will reopen between 7 and 9 p.m. this Friday evening. Southern Humboldt Supervisor Michelle Bushnell also commented on the closure, highlighting concerns about responding to emergencies.
Just like we've been having in the past month or so, something new every single day. Today, there was a slip out on the Alder Point Road about 2.5 miles. From the Garberville turnoff on the Alder Point Road, closing Alder Point Road. However, this was significant because at the same time, there was a fire reported in the Palo Verde area, and CAL FIRE and responding volunteer fire departments needed to utilize that road to respond to the fire. Luckily, CAL FIRE was able to air attack it and stop forward progress at 2 acres. But the Alder Point Road at this time continues closed. This closure is in the construction site right above Lower Sawmill. A lot of people reference it to the farmhouse area. And currently, I think it's around 3 o'clock now, they are still trying to fix that slip out and make that road accessible for traffic.
Bushnell, a frequent user of Alder Point Road, shared available detours.
please don't use upper sawmill, lower sawmill back road. That is a private road. Currently, there is high patrol at the upper sawmill, not allowing people through. It's very narrow and not a well-maintained road, and as I said, it's private. So if you're coming, need to get to Garberville from the Alder Point Way, you need to take Dyerville Loop and hit the Elk Ridge Road or Fruitland Ridge Road and come down into Myers Flat, hit 101. If you're going into Blocksburg, you can go down into Fort Seward. If you're going into Harris, you can continue on the Dyerville Loop Road and come out on the Alder Point Road and then head up to Pratt Mountain. You could go Fortuna, you know, hit 36 and go Alder Point Road, but that is the farthest way around.
These detours add over an hour to commute. And with fires occurring in rural outlying areas, we asked if she has concerns about the general condition of the roads in her district and how they might impact emergency response.
Yes, east and west, both roads are under a lot of construction right now, and this construction has resulted from past disasters through the winter, this last winter and a couple of winters ago. And what they're finding, as most people travel the Shelter Cove Road and travel the Alder Point Road, through this construction, they're finding that the ground is very unstable. As you can tell, the hill's been sliding for years there. And so it does, you know, immediately I got a phone call from Chief Teets in Garberville, who was trying to get the water tender up the hill. The road had just closed, and he didn't know what to do. We have had an extraordinary fire year, and it seems like a new fire has broke out every single day. California, in general, is burning away right now. And so it is very nervy when you can't access where you need to. And already, most of the time when those fires break out, they're an hour for people to access as it is. And then when you have to go 2 hours around because of a road issue, fires in 2 hours can be 200 acres.
This is why she emphasized that all communities should support their local volunteer departments.
Yes, and our volunteer fire departments have been tested this season and have been out on calls every day, almost every day, and those folks are working jobs and they're exhausted. And so if you have an opportunity to donate to the volunteer fire departments, please do. I believe Whitethorn Department is having their annual barbecue fundraiser on the 17th, next Saturday. Just pop in and get a plate to go. Give them $20 or $40, and it doesn't have to be a lot. Every little bit counts.
Today's fire activity was in the Palo Verde community, and its neighboring district to the south in northern Mendocino will be holding their annual fundraiser tomorrow, Saturday, August 10th.
My name is Michelle Deline, and I am one of the representatives of the Bell Springs Volunteer Fire Department, which are their first responders up on Bell Springs. Bell Springs Fire is very important to support for numerous reasons. The first that comes to mind would be that before CAL FIRE arrives, we are most likely to be closest to a fire. And I feel like most importantly, although you can see the fires on Bell Springs, a lot of the times CAL FIRE needs our abilities to navigate the roads and know how to get to the fire, or if there's gate codes or any kind of quicker access, the knowledge of the community is very important. We are just so appreciative of everything that CAL FIRE does. And in fact, it was a big goal of ours to, you know, if we can get there first and we can get it out, CAL FIRE is really busy. So we are happy if we can extinguish a smaller fire for them and keep everybody safe so they can stay on the road, you know, making sure that everyone is taken care of.
You can support their efforts tomorrow at Tan Oak Park in Leggett.
These hometown heroes deserve our support. You can support them best by coming out August 10th, beginning at 4 p.m. to Tan Oak Park in Leggett on the 101 in Laytonville. 5 different live musical acts, Tommy Arnold, the Bell Springs House Band, While We're Young, and Jackie Clementine, Beer and Cider and Wine Bar, sponsored by Draft Punk, formerly of the Big Chief in Laytonville, plate dinner with homestyle cooking curated by the Bell Springs community, yard games, dessert table, kids zone with splash area and bounce house, and the kids have their own dollar raffle with tons of fun toys this year. Our famous raffle is going again with a huge selection of gift certificates to local businesses and fabulous grand prizes, including tickets to the Cannabis Cup, and our traditional cord of firewood for winter. I just want to let everybody know out there that our community, no, regardless of any cultural or economic change, is still a beautiful and vibrant community which deserves to feel safe. We've organized a really great event so that the way that you can support is to actually have fun on August 10th at 4 p.m. Just because things are changing doesn't mean that our feelings about keeping our community safe and our dedication to you are going to be left unchanged into the foreseeable future with your support.
Admission is free, and more information can be found on social media by searching the annual Bell Springs Volunteer Fire Department fundraiser on Facebook.
Humboldt Asian and Pacific Islanders celebrate Ubon, a festival of remembrance in Arcata's Creamery District this Sunday. KMUD's Kelly Lincoln brings us the details.
HOPI, Humboldt Asian and Pacific Islanders Solidarity Group, is having its annual Ubon Festival this Sunday, August 11th. Marilyn Pike Nicely spoke with KMUD News about the festival.
It's a time in Japanese Buddhist tradition when our ancestors come to Earth to visit. It's very much like Dia de los Muertos. Growing up, I would always take my grandmother to the graves to clean, to offer food, offer blessings. And then every weekend, there was a bon dance at one of the Buddhist temples or Shinto shrines. And that was kind of our summer social activities. It was just wonderful. And many people up here grew up with it too. And so when we talked about Ubon, they're like just on board to help and just bring it to our community.
Ubon is a grounded festival, even in its casual Humboldt format.
Rinban Sakamoto, who is a Buddhist priest from San Jose, and he's been coming up since our first one, and he's just wonderful. He does a beautiful blessing. He shares stories about Ubon, and so this is that real connection to a Buddhist church. Some people have been saying, well, you have to have a church to have a Ubon festival, but we are calling it Humboldt style Ubon. We don't have a Buddhist church, but we bring Rinban Sakamoto, and we really share about our ancestors' visits, our honoring our ancestors. We'll have a table with an ancestral tree where people can write notes to their ancestors. And an altar. So it's all about our ancestors and finding the joy that they're here with us, visiting, and then it's a time of remembrance, a time of honoring. And
Pike Nicely says the Ubon activities will take place in Arcata's Creamery District.
So our main center is like the Arcata Playhouse. That's where we have our booths and our kitchen and all that. And then the Haliashi parking lot is where the Ubon dancing will be happening. The performers will be. We'll have Humboldt Taiko. We'll have Rick Cruz, who will play the shakuhachi. We have what we call Bon Odori, which is Bon dance. And this is something that people can jump in and follow, have fun. Last year, we had a lot of children dancing. And we'll also have children activities.
People have been practicing the traditional Ubon dances and will be available to make it easy for newcomers to join in.
So Craig Kuramata is just a wonderful dancer and dance instructor. His background is kind of with folk dancing. But he grew up in Salt Lake City, and he grew up doing Ubon festivals. So he offered to do the classes. So when we get together on Ubon on August 11th and start dancing, people just can jump in, follow, and it's just really fun. It's a great way of bringing community together, and the dances are just so much fun. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. We have a group making spam musubi, which is like a rice sandwich. There's also tuna and tofu, and Hopi will be selling that at our concession along with some Hawaiian juices. We'll have merchandise, t-shirts, hats, all kinds of great things to sell. We're going to have the, we've been also working on the Eureka Chinatown monument project. And so there's going to be a ECP Eureka Chinatown project booth, and Sherry Wu will be there to answer any questions, talk about the monument, and be selling chocolates for as a fundraiser for the monument.
Marilyn shares growing up with Obon in Hawaii.
So I grew up in Hawaii, and every weekend there was a bon dance at a different Buddhist temple or Shinto shrine. And when I looked around, you know, it was like everybody, there's so many different ethnicities present, and they all had that strong feeling of just coming together, dancing together, enjoying this time, because it's only in Hawaii, it was only during from July to August, you know, so it was about a month or a month and a half, but it was such a festive time. And that's how we want to have Obon Festival here in Humboldt. It's one day, but come together, enjoy the music, enjoy the dancing, jump in and be a part of the dancing, have fun with the food, children do activities. This is, Obon is for everyone. Obon Festival is for anyone who wants to be, to honor their ancestors. And it doesn't matter what your ethnicity is. You know, this is a time that we just come together and share our histories. And it's not cultural appropriation. It's nothing like that. We call it cultural sharing. So if you're going to wear a kimono and you're not Japanese, that's fine, because you're honoring that tradition of wearing a kimono to a bon dance or a happy coat. So we invite people to dress up, but be respectful, you know, make sure that what you're wearing is traditional, or it's something that's not so outlandish. But in that way, be respectful. But yeah, I want to invite everyone to Obon.
As Marilyn Pike nicely explained, Sherry Wu and Eureka's Chinatown Project will be at Obon raising funds for the Eureka Chinatown Monument. Marilyn gives some details about Eureka's history with California's Chinese expulsion in the 1800s.
The Eureka Chinatown Project came together. This woman moved to the area, her name is Brianne Mirza, and she is Chinese and West Indian ancestry. And she came here and, you know, wanted to learn more about the Chinese in the area, did a lot of research and found out about how they were driven out in around 1890. And what happened was there was kind of a gang war and exchange of gunfire, and a city councilman was walking by and got shot and killed. And within 24 hours, people rounded up all the Chinese and put them on a boat and shipped them out to San Francisco. And so that was the first of the Chinese expulsion. And there's even, it's called the Eureka Method, how it was done back then. And since that time and up until recently, it's been not a whole lot of Asians settling in the area. We did have, I think you've heard of Charlie Moon. Charlie Moon was a Chinese man who was working with this ranch, and the owner protected him and really said to the crowd, no, you can't have him, and helped him hide. And he married a local Indian woman. And we have this whole line of Charlie Moon ants. heritage and people who are related to Charlie Moon. So they also have a foundation, and we've been working with them. We even got the city of Arcata to name the alley, right by Coast Central in Eureka, and that's where the Chinatown was, and it's called Charlie Moon Way. So there's things that we've been doing to just raise awareness of the history, restore history, and that way it's like it's restorative justice also.
And this is Kelly Lincoln reporting for KMUD News.
Ray Hamill brings us the details of all the big local sports stories in this report.
The annual Joe Escher Day will be held in Ferndale this weekend, and this year's event will honor local softball legend Haley Dalcini. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on that story in just a moment, and we'll also be looking at the other big local sports stories of the week, including how the Humboldt Crabs fared in their final series of the summer, what's next for one Ferndale baseball player, how College of the Redwoods intends on honoring a former player and coach, news of an experienced coach set to join Cal Poly Humboldt, as well as some local flag football news and a big weekend in store for local motorsports. But first up, local softball legend Haley Dalcini will be honored in Ferndale this weekend at the third annual Joe Escher Day. The annual event is hosted by the Spirit of Ferndale, a local volunteer group which promotes and supports community events in the Cream City, and is held in remembrance of Joe Escher, a Ferndale native who holds the record for the most innings pitched in a Major League Baseball game. Every year, the day's activities include a couple of youth games and an old-timers game, as well as recognition of someone who has made a lasting contribution to local sports. This year's honoree is former Fortuna softball standout Haley Dalcini, whose contribution to the sport in Humboldt County is unparalleled. Dalcini left a lasting legacy in the HDNL after dominating for 4 years in high school, and she was a four-time Big Five MVP. She would go on to star in the college game for both Fresno State and the Texas Longhorns, leading the latter to the Women's College World Series Championship Series in June 2022 and becoming the first ever HDNL player to play in and win a game in the NCAA Division I Championship Series. The festivities on Saturday will take place at Fireman's Park and get underway at 10 a.m. Escher was born in Illinois but grew up in Ferndale and represented the Ferndale Wildcats. He famously pitched all 26 innings in the longest ever Major League Baseball game back in 1920 and has long since been revered as Ferndale's greatest ever baseball player, who enjoyed 12 seasons in the majors. Elsewhere in local sports this week, the Humboldt Crabs closed out the 2024 season in style, sweeping 3 games against the Menlo Legacy at the Arcata Ballpark over the weekend. The Crabs combined for 35 runs on 37 hits in the 3 victories, winning 3-1 on Friday, 17-1 on Saturday, and 15-2 on Sunday. After Sunday's game, Crabs manager Robin Guyver handed out the team's annual end-of-season awards. Jet Ruby was named team MVP, while Andrew Overland was named Pitcher of the Year, Bryce Stockton was named Relief Pitcher of the Year, Billy Hamm was named Offensive Player of the Year, and Ethan Rivera received the Coach's Award. It was another successful season for the local club, which finished 33-17. The Crabs competed in the newly formed Pacific Empire League and almost qualified for the league's championship series, missing out by just half a game after rallying from a tough start to league play and finishing third in the standings. In other local baseball news, a former Ferndale Wildcat standout is taking his talents to Feather River College after a memorable senior season for the Wildcats. Austin Michael will join the Golden Eagles after 4 years at Ferndale High School. As a senior, he played a pivotal role on the Wildcats' march to a first Little Four championship in 19 years and a first North Coast Section championship in 7 years. The Wildcats clinched the conference championship on the final day of the regular season with a doubleheader sweep over the St. Bernard's Crusaders, who had dominated the Little Four for much of the past 2 decades. Michael and the Wildcats would go on to claim the NCS Division VI championship with a 17-5 win over Point Arena, 1 year after losing a section final to St. Bernard's, and they followed that with a first ever appearance in the NorCal State Baseball Playoffs. Elsewhere in local sports this week, College of the Redwoods Athletics announced that they will honor former player, coach, and administrator Tino Romero this fall. Romero passed away unexpectedly earlier this summer at the age of 54, and his passing was felt throughout the entire COR athletic department. Romero first joined the Corsairs after graduating from Eureka High School in 1988, and he enjoyed 2 outstanding years with the football team, earning all conference honors both years while playing on the defensive line. He was named the Conference Defensive Player of the Year in 1989 and earned a scholarship to play at Washington State. He returned to CR in 1999 as linebacker's coach and would become an invaluable member of the department for the following 25 years, serving as head coach of the football team for 2 years and spending the past 7 years as the department's athletics program coordinator. Romero will be inducted into the CR Athletics Hall of Fame at the October 5th home football game against Chabot College at the Redwood Bowl. It was also announced this week that the CR Foundation will create a scholarship in Romero's name. A date for a planned celebration of life has still to be finalized, but it will take place sometime around the Hall of Fame induction. Cal Poly Humboldt Athletics, meanwhile, announced this week that Jim Zaleski has been named the new assistant wrestling coach, joining his brother and head coach, Lenny Zaleski. Jim brings a wealth of experience to the position, having served as an NCAA Division I head coach for the past 23 years and winning 3 NCAA Division I national championships. The Lumberjacks wrestling program returns this coming winter for the first time since the early 1990s. In local youth sports, the Humboldt Flag Football League for players in kindergarten through 8th grade will conclude a successful first summer season with 3 championship games on Saturday. The action gets underway at Hiller Park in McKinleyville at 10 a.m. And finally this week, motorsports return to the Redwood Acres Raceway this weekend for the first time since June 22nd. A packed night of racing action will feature late models, upstate modifieds, upstate bombers, the NorCal Legend Series, mini stocks, and vintage modifieds. Gates open at 4 p.m. and the races begin at 5 p.m. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
This November, voters in Sonoma County will decide on a first-of-its-kind proposal known as Measure J to ban large concentrated animal feeding operations. These industrial farms, known as CAFOs, primarily raise chickens, ducks, and cattle. Christina Garfinkel with the Coalition to End Factory Farming says CAFOs tend to have poor records when it comes to animal welfare and spark environmental concerns with the odor and runoff from the lagoons of animal waste.
They pollute water with nitrates, phosphates. They also pollute the air through greenhouse gas emissions. And they're also just perfect vectors to spread very contagious diseases such as avian flu.
The EPA and the state monitor the water supply near large farms on a regular basis. The operations are also subject to state rules on animal welfare and often participate in voluntary organic certification programs. The measure would give the CAFOs 3 years to either reduce the size of their herds or flocks or wind down operations. And it would require the county to retrain any CAFO workers who lose their jobs. Randy Black is a dairy advisor for the University of California Cooperative Extension. She says Measure J would cost the county millions.
There is a pretty large impact on both our local agricultural economy, but also on our workforce, both being able to be employed, but also on our county budget in order to provide the mandated training.
A similar proposed ban will also be on the ballot in Berkeley this fall. But since the city doesn't have any CAFOs, that measure would prevent any future large animal farms from coming in. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr, and thanks to our reporters. Reporting from KMUD in the studio in Redway, I'm Wilder Bliss, Brosmer Brown, youth and journalism intern.